Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week was born in São Paulo, Brazil, and grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. He played professional basketball in Europe for 15 seasons, and from 2003 to 2008, he captained the Belgium national basketball team. On March 22, 2016, he was seriously injured at the Brussels airport during the bombing, which killed 32 people, injuring more than 340. 5 months and 13 surgeries later, he walked out of the U of M hospital. His name, Sebastian Bellin. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to an amazing person who's lived all over the world. His outlook on life is spectacular. And it's an honor to have him, Sebastian Bellin. Seb, welcome. An honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's start with talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Oh, man. I had a beautiful childhood in the sense that, I was born to two Belgian parents. My mom was a physical therapist, a little bit of a hippie, I would say. And my dad was in international business. So very disciplined, very, worked for American companies for most of his life. Worked for in the pharmaceutical industry and later in the nutraceutical. So I kind of had the best of both worlds. I had the hippie physical therapist and I had the disciplined kind of capitalist, and I put them together and it was really a wonderful mix of parents. And then, I have two brothers. And then later on, my dad remarried, my parents divorced, and I had two more brothers. So at one point we were five brothers in the house.
What's the best thing you learned from dad, and what's the most important thing you learned from mom?
Mom, that kind of the unmeasurable energy. There's just something you can't put your finger on, that positivity, that kind of happy-go-lucky mentality where if you're not constantly measuring things, everything that's quantitative, my mom is just a beautiful source of energy, just kind of a happy-go-lucky bohemian approach, very healthy, very, very strict on health. And then my dad was the disciplinarian, a lot of resilience, rigor, a lot of hard work, rose from not much to being extremely successful in the world of business. So I think, for my mom, it's more this positive mindset, and for my dad, this resilience, this work ethic, discipline that I was able to combine.
We're talking to Sebastian Bellin, and he lived, by the time he was 10, he had lived in three continents and he knew four languages. And then from 1998 to 2000, he attended Oakland University, and he played for the incomparable coach, Greg Campy. Talk to us about Greg Campy.
There's game changers in your life. Coach Campy was a game changer without ever imposing himself as a game changer. I really admire people who can influence others without actually trying to influence others. And, when I went to visit Oakland for the first time, Oakland was Division II. And I was recruited by several schools on the East Coast. And because I wanted to be closer to Belgium, I ended up choosing Marist. But I had gone visit Oakland when they were still Division II. And after 2 years at Marist College, I decided to transfer. I wanted to new, and I called Campy, and Oakland was Division One at the time, you know, had just become Division One. And, you know, Campy could have been bitter, could have been like, hey, you said no to me once, you know, we're Division One now. But I remember him never hesitating. And, welcoming me to this program that he was about to take a big step, you know, going from a very successful D2 to kind of the unknown in D1. And I saw it as an incredible opportunity, you know, to help him lay the foundation of a D1 program. And I remember Campy being really excited about that challenge. He's always someone who never shied away from challenges, you know, new things, new challenges. He never stays, you know, satisfied in terms of growth for his program or for himself. And I remember being really attracted to that.
And he's now starting his 39th year at Oakland. He's won 583 games, lost 424, so that's a 570 percentage, an icon in the collegiate basketball arena. You made him everything he is, Sepp.
No, absolutely not. What I will tell you is that I was very fortunate to have him as a coach at the time when he was going from Division II to Division I, because, you know, he had already been a coach for 20 something years at Oakland. And I remember being, I never had big stats. I never had big, I was never kind of an attractive player to recruit. I was just really big and strong. And so I guess some coaches were like, well, we can always use a tall, strong dude on our team, you know? So, but Campy, I guess, always saw something. And what I saw in Campy was much more than just, you know, a program, a D1 school, new facility, all that. I saw that already he had been 20 years. And something to me that has always attracted me, you know, since a young kid is the unmeasurable, things you can't measure. And so Campy is an extremely loyal person, which I guess you can measure in the 20 something years. At the time, he had already shown so much loyalty to Oakland, but more importantly, he showed a loyalty to coaching. You know, he could, I'm sure, have taken more lucrative jobs or other, but you know, he has an absolute devotion to coaching, to his school, to his program. And that you can sense in an incredible way. You can sense that energy. And that attracted me to him right away.
We're talking to Sebastian Bellin, who then went to Europe and played professional basketball for 15 seasons. When we come back, we'll talk to him about that chapter in his life. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Sebastian Bellin. Sebastian, 15 seasons playing professional basketball in Europe. Talk about that chapter of your life, please.
I got a little lucky. I got to admit, I got a little lucky. You know, we were in Oakland's first year at under Coach Campy. We won the old Summit League, which is the Mid-Continent Conference back then. We won the regular season. We beat Valpo that had, I think, won it like 5 or 6 years in a row. And I still had 1 year of eligibility, but I just thought at the time the Bosman rule was coming into consideration. And the Bosman rule was that anybody with a European passport doesn't count as a foreigner. So for example, an Italian team could have two Americans and two European players on roster. So you could have two Americans or non-Europeans, two Europeans, and the rest had to be Italians. So while we were coming off a really good season, I had a Bosman passport, you know, I had a Belgian passport. So I got a great offer to go play in Italy. And I ended up signing with probably the best team I could have, because it was full of vets. Walter Berry you know, was on that. It was his last season. Damir Tvrdic, like a Croatian guy. It's just a lot of vets that taught me what it was to be professional and what mistakes not to make. And it was a really phenomenal season in Italy. Played there one more. And then after that, I just went to Belgium, transferred to Belgium because my wife, who I had met at Oakland, got a teaching job at in Belgium. And so we were really lucky to be able to combine, you know, her career in teaching as well as 14 more years of basketball after Italy. So my career was always a role player. You know, I never really had that much talent. I just really knew what it was like to play on championship teams, you know, and Campy really educated me that way. I give him a lot of credit on learning what it is. Plus my first year with guys like Walter Berry, what it is to play, what championship coaches are looking for. And so I saw that it was much more advantageous to be a role player on championship teams than be a star player on, you know, crappy teams. And that's the story of my career.
Your life at that point was fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's go to March 22nd, 2016. God had a different plan for you. Tell us about that day, please.
Yeah, when I retired from basketball with two buddies of mine, we started a little company called Key Motion. And it's the world's first automated video production system. And so you could, it was a coaching tool. It was a marketing tool. You could live stream a basketball game 100% automatically. No cameraman, no operator. And we had just opened offices in New York. So I was at the airport waiting to catch a flight. I was about to catch a flight from Brussels back to New York. And right when I'm at the ticket counter and right when they hand me the boarding pass, a bomb goes off about, I'd say, 50 yards behind me. And I feel the explosion. And right away, I knew that, you know, it was a lot of it was in the news. You know, there was a lot of attacks during that time throughout Europe. And right away, I knew it was a terrorist attack. And so my first instinct was not to run towards the exit because I thought they were going to come in, you know, with machine guns and everything. I decided to run towards passport control, where I knew that there were police officers that were there. And so, unfortunately, I ran straight towards the second terrorist. And when he detonated the bomb, I was about 6 yards away from the second bomb that, you know, practically blew both my legs off while trying to flee, you know, the first bomb. I got caught in the second one, which radically changed my life in that moment.
Your wife, Sarah, your two daughters were back in Battle Creek. They were expecting you in a couple weeks for Easter. You're laying there. Your picture of you laying there went all over the world. What were your thoughts, your focus? How did you survive those first few minutes?
Yeah, it's a question that still comes up. You know, it's one of those challenges that life gave me of trying to dissect, you know, what made me, what gifted me the survivor to be a survivor and not a victim. You know, a victim is someone who after a challenge becomes less, you know, and a survivor is someone who overcomes a challenge, who may be changed forever, but who overcomes it. And the bigger the challenge, the bigger the lesson. So it may sound crazy, but I was fortunate to have a dead woman right next to me. You know, so a few seconds after I came to, after the second, there was a dead woman that was next to me. And I realized, I think that's where the real blessing was in an instant, I realized that this dead woman was a victim. You know, she had no choice to survive. Her journey ended there. But I actually survived the bomb. I was still alive. So in that very moment, instead of being a victim of a bombing attack, I was a survivor of a bombing attack. And it gave me a completely new perspective on the challenge that lay ahead of me, which, you know, I was bleeding to death and I had to find ways to overcome that moment, not as a victim, as a survivor. And when you survive something, Jack, fear is a big element in it. You know, a victim will project themselves into a fear mindset. So you're a victim, you think, oh, I'm going to die. And it's an assumption. You're not dead. You're assuming that you're going to die. When you're a survivor, you're like, oh, I survived. And you might think it's a connotation. You might think it's a play on words, but there's a big difference between saying, I'm surviving, I survived, or I'm going to die. One is a survivor, one is a victim. And from that moment, I had the realization of being a survivor, having overcome, survived that bomb, gave me a calmness to be able to execute my game plan.
And then you asked the porter to push you to the front of the airport to get help. And when we come back, we're going to talk to you about the next 5 months thereafter, 5 months in the hospital, 13 operations to help you. Today, you've run marathons, you've done a half triathlon, you're planning on doing the Ironman in Hawaii this coming October. Amazing. We're talking to Sebastian Bellin, who said, quote, I was thrown a pretty big pickle in the Brussels airport there. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, with Sebastian Bellin. Sebastian, for the next 5 months, you're in a hospital, 13 surgeries. How did you make it through that?
Yeah, I have really good people around me. You know, going back to my beautiful mother, you know, my mom told me growing up, she would always remind me, she said, listen, Seb, if you're the smartest guy in the room, have the courage to change rooms. You know, don't stay in rooms where you're the smartest guy. And it doesn't happen very often. But I always find myself on teams with teammates or in startup projects, whatever, that where there's people that are a lot smarter, a lot more talented than me. And this was, you know, my priority, where I knew this was a really long road ahead. You know, I had multiple fractures. I had, you know, hip, both legs. I mean, it was just endless, where they couldn't even operate on me for the first 3 weeks because my body had to stabilize. You know, I had lost 50% of my blood during the attacks. So the first 3 weeks was just to stabilize me. I couldn't move. I was in a external fixator. So to go from a professional athlete to all of a sudden finding yourself on a hospital bed, you know, immobile. I guess the physical side of me that had always been a focus took a sabbatical, and I was able to really really kind of formulate a mindset. I think before any big challenge, your mindset is the most critical aspect of overcoming that. The body will follow. The body follows. The body is the most amazing, you know, piece of, it's the biggest gift, you know, life could have ever given us. It's been perfected over, you know, years and years of trial and error, natural trial and error. So the body follows. The first step is the mindset. And so those first five months, it was constantly picking people's brains, you know, surrounding myself with people who knew much more about the situation, of realizing that, listen, life gave me a second chance, a redo. How many of us get a redo? You know, I had to learn to walk again. I had to learn to rebuild my body. I had to learn to everything started not from zero, but I got a second chance. And so I wanted to really surround myself with people who could really help and not screw this second chance up.
Okay, I quote you now. I'm thankful for that experience. Sebastian, are you kidding me?
I'm not, Jack. And I took a lot of slack, you know, in my home country, in Belgium. I took a lot of slack for saying that. Because I understand that there's people who lost loved ones. You know, there's 32 people who died that day. And so obviously, you know, when they hear something like that, it can shock them. But this is the type of choice that I made where this can be a gift. All the biggest challenges, how horrible they may be. Like I said, the bigger the challenge, the bigger the lesson. So life will give you that lesson. That lesson is there. And it's a choice you make. Are you going to survive it? Are you going to overcome it? And the reward that life gives you after you overcome it is the most incredible lessons that can change, you know, your perception, your every aspect of your life can change. Because the realization, the awareness of what you learn when you're about to die, when life is being taken away from you, you realize how precious life is, how never to waste an opportunity that's gifted by God, by life, whatever you want to call it. We live every single day in this pool of opportunity, of energy, that if you grasp it and you understand that it is a gift, then your mindset changes and for the better.
Okay, speaking of lessons, I quote you again. One of the biggest lessons that I've learned is that if you put emphasis on the human side, if you really focus on the quality that exists in all things that can't be measured, like love, tolerance, empathy, humility, all those things, the more you focus on those, your life changes completely for the better.
Yes. And if I can just kind of, I guess, to summarize what life has taught me in the most violent of ways, in the most violent of lessons, is that for any big challenge to overcome, whether it's winning a championship, whether it's starting a business, you better have a foundation of quality. And what I mean by quality is limitless. Anything that can be measured, so for example, stats, money, all those things are measurable. And if you can measure it, it's finite. There's a limit to it. If I tell you, Jack, if I tell you to count out loud from 1 to 1,000, at one point you have to stop. You know, you have to catch your breath. If I tell you to think to count to 1,000, you never have to stop. So energy of the mind, the mindset, is limitless. If it's measurable, it's finite. There's limits. If there is non-measurable entity like love, resilience, courage, loyalty, you know, Greg's, you know, Coach Campy's, like, loyalty, work ethic, those are all things that you can't put a number next to. And if you build your foundation on a quality mindset, so the unmeasurable, I mean, you will be surprised at the things that you can accomplish, that you can achieve, that you can overcome. So it really is a quality mindset rather than the quantity that I've always been focused on.
All right. Talk to us about your four pillars of life.
Well, I think, you know, you brilliantly, and congratulations, Jack, because without even knowing it, you kindly asked questions that alluded to every one of them. You know, the first pillar that I believe in is a team, you know, create a team around you with no ego. So again, the ego is the biggest blocking point of growth. So a team with ego is a team that's limiting themselves, because what does the ego need? The ego needs measurement. How do you feed an ego? You feed the ego by telling them that they have the most or they're the best, but in comparison to others. So if you have a team of egos, you have a team that's limited. because you need to feed it quantity. It's a team focused on quantity, and quantity is limitations. So the idea is to create a team with no ego. So create a team with people that are better than you from the start. You know, humble. Humility is very important when you're building a championship mentality mindset. The second one is knowing the difference between fear and danger. Fear is an illusion. If you are not in danger, Jack, if you are not in danger, the only place fear can exist is in your mind. So a quick example of that is a car coming at you full speed. All right. You're in danger. You got to move out of the way. You're going to get hit by a car. But waking up in the morning thinking, oh, my God, no, today I'm going to get hit by a car. You're creating that fear. You're allowing fear to exist in your mindset. So if you are not in danger, if there's no car coming at you, anything other than your body not being in danger is a complete illusion. So we have power over fear. And a lot of people in this world fear, and they waste an incredible amount of energy on illusions, on things that don't exist. So if you want to achieve the unachievable, well, you better eliminate those illusions that are draining your mindset. So it's knowing the difference between fear and danger. The third one is focus. I find that if you eliminate illusions, if you eliminate fear from your life, you can start focusing much better on objectives. And there is no big challenge happens overnight. It takes time. So you better learn how to focus on the long run, on the long shot. And if you have a lot of fear, it's very hard to focus. It's very hard to see opportunities that life gives you every single day. So focus is critical in a championship quality mindset. It's critical. And the better you focus, the better you learn to focus, the more you can sustain energy on an objective. And if you can sustain that objective, well, then you higher your chance, you increase your chance of reaching that objective. And the last one is quality versus quantity. So I believe, again, we spoke about it already. We live in a world obsessed with quantity. And ask all these longtime coaches, you know, the Greg Campies, the Tom Izzos, the Mike Krzyzewskis, you know, I don't know them, but coaches often refers to them. You know, they will tell you that talent doesn't exist. Talent exists. It's not a differentiator. You know, if at the highest levels of achievement, of success, talent is not what makes the difference. So quantity, stats, and all that. Anything that's measurable is limited. Anything that's not measurable is quality. So what makes champions, what makes them the quality mindset is that resilience, that love, that tolerance, that's all those things. You know?
We're talking to Sebastian Bellin, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything That's Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Anything is possible. 15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Sebastian Bellin on March 16th, 2016. He was nearly killed in the terrorist attack at the Brussels airport, spent 5 months in hospitals, 13 surgeries. Sebastian, let's go back to that day, that morning, and pretend that God speaks to you and says, Seb, if you go to the airport today, here's what's going to happen to you. Your choice. Do you want to go to the airport or not? what would you tell God?
I'd say, listen, can we make a deal here? I'm going back because I want to know what I know now after that experience. But can you make it a little bit less dramatic? Can I have less injuries or less, you know, does it need to be that serious? Because, you know, I am handicapped for life. I have lost all feeling in my left leg from the knee down. I have a big chunk of my calf muscle that is no longer there. You know, it's a handicap doesn't mean you can't do something. You know, like a blind person, Jack, can see. It's just a little bit different than the way you and I see, right? So a handicap is a constant challenge. And so I'm constantly challenged. I'm constantly learning, but there are difficult moments. You know, there are mornings when I wake up and my leg is just swollen, or, you know, it's not an easy thing. But yes, to answer your question, I would gladly go back because life educated me, and I learned things that make me today a better human being, and life equipped me with a skill set learned violently, like I always say, that benefits me in unmeasurable ways.
Sebastian may be handicapped, but let's realize he has run marathons. He's run a half triathlon, and he's planning on going to Hawaii this fall to run the Ironman triathlon. Okay, tough question. Have you forgiven the 8 terrorists?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually a really good question, Jack. You know, the Ironman in Kona is October 8th. And the terrorist trial starts in Brussels on October 24th. And so, you know, one of the things I've been focusing on in these past years is there's a quote by Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, in talking about nonviolence and talking about mindsets. He talks about forgiveness. And he says that true strength, a sign of true strength, a person who has unmeasurable strength, is someone who can fully forgive. And so that quote spoke a lot to me, because I wanna go and finish this Ironman. And I want to be able to go in front of these terrorists in full forgiveness, to fully forgive them. Now, don't get me wrong, they have to pay for what they did, you know, but I will be in a mindset of full forgiveness, because I know that through these last 6 years of having to overcome my handicap and all the things that I've learned, I'm a better human being. I may be handicapped, I may be changed forever, but I'm a better human being. I'm a better father. I'm a better son. I'm a better husband. I'm a better person. And it's one of those reasons is because of what life gifted me in that experience. So yes.
If there's a listener tonight that says, Seb, with all due respect, you're nuts. I can't forgive God, and surely not forgive the person who did me dirty. What would you say to that person tonight?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I'm not right or wrong. There's no right and wrong or life. You know, I try to refrain from judging or comparing, because again, that feeds the ego. When you compare and when you judge, you're feeding the ego. So someone who says that to me is like, you have the right to feel, to think that I'm nuts. What I can tell you is that the 4 pillars, it works. You know, I'm not some hippie here telling you some utopian ideal. You know, I've applied this to startups. I've applied this to my personal life. I've applied this to entrepreneurship, to business, to keynotes, whatever it is, I apply it and it freaking works. And so, you know, the best focus of my energy is just to say, look, you're entitled to your opinion. Bless you, you know, bless what you think, but I'd be crazy. You know, when a championship team, you never change a championship team, right? When you find the winning a formula that works, just keep it, tweak it here and there. I'm not saying I don't tweak things along the way, but I'm convinced for myself that I have found a formula of the four pillars that is unstoppable. And again, quality mindset is unlimited. You cannot measure love, resilience, tolerance, empathy, all those things that are critical to achieve the unachievable, the unimaginable. It's there. So yes, I call me nuts all you want. I'll enjoy being nuts because I enjoy this quality of life that I've been gifted.
All right. Another gift you had. We've got 2 minutes left. From 2017 to 2019, you were the general manager of Proximus Spirou. Talk about that two-year chapter.
Yeah, I think it was a great bookending to a basketball career. You know, I was fortunate enough to be a general manager of the biggest basketball team, one of the biggest basketball teams in professional teams in Belgium. And I found out that I wasn't really a good general manager. I wasn't really good at it. I didn't really enjoy it. But it was a gift in the sense that I think a lot of players or ex-professional players or college players never get a book ending. You know, they always kind of carry on or live through their basketball career, and it spills over into other aspects of life without realizing all the talent they have in other areas. And here, you know, it was really, I came to a realization that no, basketball's done. You know, I'm just a fan now. I love Oakland. I love Coach Campy, you know, so I try to help out where I can, but I'm no longer involved day to day in basketball. And it was a gift. It was a gift hidden, you know, to say, hey, basketball's done. It's gifted me so much, but now I'm moving on to other things. And it was immediate bookend stop to a basketball career that I'm very grateful for.
Sebastian, basketball may have been a gift to you. You are a gift to everybody that you meet. Thanks much. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate the compliment coming, especially coming from you. So thank you very much.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Prosciullo. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.
Believe in yourself.